the 90s, the Ramses remained under a, quote, umbrella of suspicion. This would explain her fractured skull and later garroting, as it could have been from the original death and then the attempt to cover it up. The theory continues that the Ramses covered up the crime with a hastily written ransom note and a staged kidnapping in order to protect their son from what would likely be a lengthy prison sentence. This was quote-unquote confirmed in an interview Burke did with Dr. Phil, his first in 20 years. In it, he comes off as awkward and suspicious, smiling and repeating what seems like scripted lines. This is about the time that I would like to remind everyone that there's no hard evidence that points him towards the murder. It is all circumstantial and speculation at best. It is also the time that I remind you that attempting to figure out if someone is lying based off of one sample of their body language is not only incredibly unscientific, it's also just ableist. Neurodivergent people, that includes autism, ADHD, Down syndrome, Tourette's, and a host of other neurotypes and disorders, anxious people, and hell, just awkward people, will laugh in somber situations. They will act like they are reading off a script, and sometimes they will actually have a script. It is asinine to act like somebody is a murderer simply because they weren't performing sadness well enough about their own dead little sister's murder case that has been cold for 25 years. Also, the same people crucifying Burke and calling him a murderer for not acting sad enough over this case that he's had to live with for nearly all of his life are tweeting about this case wine drunk while listening to pop music and scrolling through Netflix. You can't call him a murderer for smiling awkwardly through an interview when you're consuming JonBenet's death as entertainment. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Welcome back to the Shelter and Warning podcast, and thank you so much for joining us today. We are a Monster of the Week podcast, literally. Every episode, we cover a new monster. Monsters can be both fact and fiction, and they're usually hiding in plain sight. The more you know about monsters, the better equipped you are to protect yourself if you ever have to face one. A quick note before we start. If anything I say is inaccurate, insensitive, offensive, or should be added to, contact me. I'm trying my best to find accurate information on my topics, but I welcome all corrections and would love to have an open dialogue on any larger issues. All social media handles and my email will be in the description, and I'll say them at the end of the episode, so stay tuned for that. This is also a blanket warning, as this episode contains mentions of murder, child abuse, sexual abuse, and other triggering subjects. If any of these bother or upset you, please take care of yourself and click away. Our topic today, the murder of JonBenet Ramsey. What exactly happened the night that she was killed? Why has it been so difficult to find any evidence at all? And why has this case, along with others like it, captured the nation so strongly, even 25 years later? Both of these could have potentially hurt the case, as it gave time for the real killer to hide or destroy any evidence that linked them back to the murder. On January 4th, 1997, the results of the autopsy of JonBenet's body came back. They confirmed that while JonBenet was garroted, or strangled with a wire, her skull was also fractured. In late April, the police conducted their first interviews with Patsy and John Ramsey, confirming in the eyes of the media that the parents had something to do with the case, despite absolutely no evidence to back that claim up. Likely hurt his sister after she took some pineapple for herself and accidentally killed her. JonBenet Ramsey was born on August 6th, 1990, to John and Patsy Ramsey. She had an older brother named Burke, and she was born in Atlanta, Georgia, although her family relocated to Boulder, Colorado. She was a bright, happy child with large blue eyes and blonde hair. JonBenet was described by family members as talkative, friendly, and intelligent, with one family member saying she was the type of kid who would go around the table and ask everyone what they did that day. Since she was very young, JonBenet had competed in and won beauty pageants, including Little Miss Colorado, Little Miss Charlevoix, Colorado State All-Star Kids Cover Girl, America's Royale Miss, and National Tiny Miss Beauty. Her mother, Patsy, was a former beauty queen herself, winning Miss West Virginia when she was younger, and her father was a wealthy CEO of Access Graphics, with a net worth of $4.6 million. The family lived comfortably, and JonBenet was a happy child. Late on December 25th, 1996, the family came home after a friend's Christmas party. JonBenet, tired from both the party and the excitement of unwrapping a bike earlier in the day, was carried to sleep by her father, and the rest of the family went to bed. In the early hours of December 26, 1996, Patsy and Jean woke to prepare for a trip. They soon realized that JonBenet wasn't in her bed, and started a search for her throughout their house. Her body was found in the family's basement, where there was a broken window and an intruder could have entered. John Ramsey remembers carrying her into their living room, relieved that she was found, and then realizing suddenly that his daughter was no longer alive. He avoided the living room at all costs after that, and the year after the murder, the family moved back to Atlanta, Georgia. Also on the morning of December 26th, Patsy Ramsey found a ransom note that demanded $118,000, almost exactly the amount of John's holiday bonus. It claimed to be from a, quote, small foreign faction that has never been corroborated or verified. The note was written on the same stationery as a notepad Patsy kept next to the phone, and despite the note's assurance, JonBenet was clearly killed before the note was even noticed and the Ramseys were contacted. Patsy and John called the police as soon as possible, but this might have been their biggest mistake. The police took little care with the house and the crime scene, possibly getting rid of or destroying crucial evidence. Only JonBenet's room was blocked off, and both cops and family members were allowed to roam freely around the rest of the house. The story of her death also spread quickly, as the Ramseys would have had guests and family members visit during the holiday season, and they needed to cancel those trips. Many in the media, both from reputable news stations and the tabloids, believed that JonBenet's parents had killed her, and this theory was only further fed through the interactions between the Ramseys and the police. The second theory is the intruder theory. This theory posits that an intruder was able to get into the Ramsey household and kill JonBenet, likely as the result of a botched kidnapping. Evidence that points to this theory includes an unidentified footprint outside the basement windows, close to where JonBenet was found, bloodstains on JonBenet's underwear, which DNA testing revealed came from people who were not the Ramseys, and unlocked doors and windows in the Ramsey household, which could have allowed somebody to sneak inside. Some experts also say the fact that she was garroted points to the intruder theory, as every immediate member of the Ramsey family has been ruled out as a suspect. In early 1998, John and Patsy Ramsey refused to do a second interview with detectives unless they were allowed to review and see evidence, which the police did not allow. While this is a reasonable request coming from two grief-stricken parents, it was a death sentence for their reputation, and across America, people believed the Ramseys were hiding something. Due to a lack of evidence and leads, the case went cold in October 1999, and the Ramseys were allowed to move on with their lives. However, the case is not closed or inactive, and the Boulder Police Department still accepts leads and tip-offs. The case has two primary theories, the family theory and the intruder theory. Each theory attempts to explain how JonBenet was killed and what exactly happened on that December night. Each theory, however, has its holes, and neither explains the crime scene fully or any subsequent evidence that was found. The family theory posits that a member of JonBenet's immediate family killed her and got away with it. The suspects in this scenario are her parents and her 9-year-old brother, Burke. This theory maintains that the most likely situation was for someone JonBenet knew to kill her, as is the most common situation for homicide cases, especially when a child is involved. It also argues that it is much more likely for someone who was in the house to have killed her, rather than someone who was an intruder and did not know the house. Evidence that points to this theory includes the basement window that John Ramsey broke when he got locked out one night and never fixed, which only the family knew about, the ransom note, demanding $118,000, which was almost exactly the amount of John's holiday bonus, and was written on the same stationery as Patsy's notepad, and finally, the pineapple. In JonBenet's autopsy, it was revealed that her stomach was still digesting pineapple from the night before. A bowl of pineapple and milk was reportedly found in the Ramsey kitchen, although Patsy Ramsey denied this completely. In an interview, Burke Ramsey acknowledged his sister's love of pineapple. Why is this important? Many believe that Burke, who had hit his sister with a golf club the week before she died. Some possibilities for the intruder theory include the foreign faction mentioned in the ransom note, a rival or enemy of John Ramsey's who decided to get back at him through his daughter, or, as Burke Ramsey believes, a pedophile who saw JonBenet in local pageants. Over the years, several leads in theory have been proposed, but none of them were plausible or had evidence to back them up. In December 2003, a new DNA sample was submitted into evidence, but nothing came of it. In June of 2006, Patsy Ramsey died of ovarian cancer at the age of 49. 2 months later, a man named John Mark Carr was arrested in Bangkok, Thailand, for confessing and having connections to the crime. Carr admitted to drugging and sexually assaulting JonBenet, but he was released after not being able to corroborate his story and not having anything but the most basic public knowledge of the crime. DNA testing also confirms that it is almost 100% certain that Carr was not at the crime scene and had nothing to do with the murder. In 2008, over 2 years after the death of Patsy Ramsey, the Boulder City District Attorney, the Boulder County District Attorney formally apologized and confirmed that no one in the Ramsey family is a suspect in a letter addressed to John Ramsey. Despite this, theories continue to circulate about the Ramsey family and their potential involvement in JonBenet's murder. In late 2010, the police conducted new rounds of interviews and added to the evidence they already had. Nearly 2.5 years later, it is revealed that a grand jury voted to indict Patsy and John Ramsey on charges of child abuse ending in death, but the Boulder County District Attorney at the time had decided there was not enough evidence and refused to sign the charges, letting the Ramseys go. The last developments concerned Burke Ramsey and his perception in the media. After CBS aired a docuseries that insinuated Burke might have killed his sister, he filed a $250 million lawsuit against Network, the production company, and Dr. Werner Spitz, one of the experts featured. Burke had also filed a separate defamation lawsuit against Spitz because of remarks he'd made on a radio interview. John Ramsey followed his son's example and also filed a lawsuit against CBS. While the exact terms are unknown, CBS and Burke managed to settle, and the charges of the lawsuit were dismissed by Michigan Court Judge David Groner. Unfortunately, it seems like the case of JonBenet Ramsey's murder will never be solved, and her family will never be able to mourn her in peace. For over two decades, her death remains a focal point for American media and American true crime. Speaking of true crime, I gotta tell you guys that I did not want to write this episode. I put it off as long as I possibly could, because the idea of having to do a calm, collected, factual episode about the murder of a child made me deeply upset for reasons that I still don't fully understand. Because I try my best to be informative and entertaining while still respecting the victims and the families of the victims in these cases. But situations like the JonBenet Ramsey murder make that difficult. Is there a way to be ethical and sympathetic while talking about the murder of a small child? To be honest, I have no idea. And you're likely sitting there thinking, well, you should have thought of this before you started your podcast. I wish I did. The first true crime episode I wrote went fine, but it was also entirely about the killer, not the victims. And it's easy to be scornful about an actual serial killer. It's much harder to tell the story of a victim while continuing to be respectful and compassionate and empathetic about their death. It's also difficult when that death is as publicized and highly divisive as JonBenet Ramsey's. There are very few things I like about the true crime community at large, and a large amount of features that I despise, and all of the worst parts are on display during this case. I think that the true crime community at large, and specifically content creators in the true crime sphere, need to understand that there are living, breathing people who have been and continue to be affected by the cases that they're talking about, and especially by the victims that they're talking about. Obviously, this is not the case with every content creator or every single case. A crime that occurred hundreds of years ago or to an unidentified victim likely doesn't have any modern connections or leads, and there are people who make true crime content that are respectful and empathetic. However, it's impossible to disagree or argue with the fact that most serial killers and famous true crime cases are shockingly recent. Ted Bundy, John Wayne Gacy, Jeffrey Dahmer, the Golden State Killer, the Hillside Strangler, Son of Sam, and of course the case of JonBenet Ramsey all occurred in the last 70 years. And that means there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people who are personally affected by these killers and more, and continue to feel those effects to this very day. There are plenty of true crime content creators who make light of these cases, including the victims. You can buy shirts that say "Choke me like Bundy and eat me like Dahmer" on Etsy. Cases that garner the most sympathy are those that involve attractive young white women, because it's difficult for society to empathize with anyone else. And if your job leads you to a point where you're making fun of or treating victims callously, you need to take a step back and reevaluate. Mind you, I'm not equally condemning all true crime. I consume it. I run a podcast that also consumes it. I have no leg to stand on here. And I'm also not saying that you should never listen to true crime again, or that you need to run every single bit of true crime that you consume by me, because I'm the moral authority on this subject. What I am saying is that in order to have a career built on true crime, you need to become desensitized to the violence, gore, and pain that occurs in these cases. There is no way to post weekly or bi-weekly or monthly for years about murder and death without becoming at least a little desensitized to what's actually occurring. That's just an occupational hazard. But you also need to be aware of the very real repercussions that your words and actions could have on someone not as desensitized. Bloody, violent crimes are always a tragedy, and what happened to JonBenet Ramsey was no different. I hope this episode of the Shelter and Warning podcast entertained and educated you. If it did, please consider leaving us a rating or review on iTunes. You can find the Shelter and Warning podcast at Shelter and Warn on Twitter, at TikTok, Instagram, and Tumblr at Shelter and Warning Podcast, or contact us through email at shelterandwarningpodcast@gmail.com. Full transcripts of our show, along with a list of all of our sources, are available in our Google Drive. Once again, if there are any corrections or additions that you would like to make, contact me and I will do my best to address them. Thank you so much for listening, and good luck. You'll need it.